Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
Some childhood memories arrive softened by time. Others refuse to blur, holding their shape no matter how old you get. For her, the earliest ones centered not on toys or birthdays, but on a space at the top of the stairs, a narrow landing that never quite felt empty. She was around 3 years old when it began, still an only child, comfortable entertaining herself for long stretches. Her bedroom was small, so she often played upstairs on the landing instead, sitting cross-legged against the wall while her mother moved through the house below. More than once, her mum paused at the bottom of the stairs, listening. Her daughter was talking. At first, it sounded like a child narrating play, which wasn't unusual. But the tone was different. The pauses were wrong. There were gaps that suggested listening, not just speaking. And sometimes the words themselves felt too precise, too structured for a 3-year-old. When her mom asked who she was talking to, the answer came easily. The lady on the landing. There was no hesitation, no playfulness in the response. It was said the same way a child might say, the neighbor, or my teacher, as if it were a simple fact. As she grew older, the conversations continued. Her vocabulary expanded. Her sentences became more complex, and the exchanges her mother overheard became harder to dismiss as pretend play. She would announce her intention plainly. I'm going to talk to the lady on the landing now, and head upstairs, sitting in the same spot, facing the same section of wall. She described the woman as a teacher who worked there. The description was specific enough to be unsettling, yet not elaborate. The lady was friendly, but stern. Someone she liked, but didn't want to disappoint. That balance, comfort mixed with restraint, gave the impression of a figure who set rules rather than simply entertained. Then, without ceremony, the conversations stopped. The lady on the landing faded from daily life, filed away with other fragments of early childhood. No one marked the moment it ended. No one questioned it. For a time, it seemed like nothing more than an imaginary friend quietly outgrown, except the unease didn't leave with her. By the age of 6, she found herself unable to walk down the stairs normally. She kept her back pressed to the wall, inching downward as though something might rush her if she turned around. The landing felt wrong in a way she couldn't articulate. The bathroom, which opened directly off that space, felt worse. Sitting there, she felt exposed, watched, unable to relax. There was a light fixture hanging from the ceiling on the landing, one that never worked. Over the 10 years they lived in the house, multiple bulbs were replaced. An electrician came more than once and could find no reason it shouldn't function. It remained dark regardless. Around this time, illness entered the house. Her grandfather was hospitalized with lung cancer, his condition deteriorating slowly. At the same time, her father fell seriously ill with salmonella, but refused to go to the hospital, insisting on staying home so as not to worry the family further. He took over her bedroom while she moved into her parents' room with her mother. From the first night sleeping there, something shifted. She woke abruptly at exactly 3:32 a.m. on a Monday morning, gripped by a chill so severe it felt internal, as though the cold came from inside her body rather than the air. She became immediately aware of the landing, even though she could not see it from the bed. Then she heard heavy breathing. At first, she wondered if it was her father. The house was quiet and sound traveled strangely at night, but the breathing felt wrong, too close, too deliberate. The unease built until she sat up in bed, eyes fixed on the bedroom doorway. That was when the shape appeared. At first glance, she tried to explain it away. A dressing gown, a trick of shadow. But as she stared, the figure separated itself from the surrounding objects. It was tall, darker than the darkness behind it, and it moved in a way that suggested it was not standing on the floor so much as hovering just above it, bobbing slightly. Panic took over. She pulled the duvet over her head and stayed perfectly still, terrified of making a sound that might wake her mother. But the figure did not stay at the door. She felt it move across the room, sensed its path around the bed. Then the weight came down on her legs, heavy and unyielding. She tried to push against it and couldn't. The pressure shifted, lifting from her legs and settling beside her head. She was certain it was staring at her, though she could not see it. Every instinct told her not to look. Somehow, she managed to break free of the paralysis, her body jerking violently. In the force of it, she kicked her mother hard enough to wake her. Her mother did not scold her. Instead, she turned and asked, "Is there someone in the room?" Before she could answer, her mother felt her heart pounding so violently, it made the bed tremble. Neither of them dared to look out from under the covers, but she did glance once more toward the door. The figure stood there again. This time she saw its eyes. Two bright orange circles glowed where a face should have been. There were no other features, no clear outline of limbs, just a tall black form, taller than the doorway itself, watching. Every Monday morning after that, at exactly the same time, it returned. For 6 or 7 weeks, the pattern held. She woke to the same sensation, the same presence. Once it happened in her own bedroom instead, though she refused to look that time, hiding completely beneath the duvet and willing herself not to see. The house, it seemed, had not limited itself to her. Family members spoke of hearing crying that turned out to be no one. Friends mistook sounds on the landing for intruders. Her mother once locked herself in the bathroom, convinced someone was upstairs, until her father returned home. A year later, she watched the bathroom light turn on by itself, the pull cord swinging violently, banging against the wall. She heard shuffling footsteps, the sound of socked feet dragging across a slick floor. Her mother rushed upstairs armed with a fire poker, having heard something too. Not long after they moved, the relief was immediate. Away from the house, she no longer felt compelled to look over her shoulder. The landing no longer existed. The lady did not return. For years, nothing followed her, which is why it unsettled her so deeply when, in her final year at university, she began to feel watched again. For a long time after they moved, she believed the house had been the explanation. The change was immediate and physical. The constant urge to check behind her disappeared. The tightness in her chest eased. She could walk downstairs without pressing herself flat to the wall, could sit in bathrooms without feeling exposed. Nights became nights again, rather than exercises, in vigilance. Childhood rolled forward, and whatever had occupied the landing seemed to stay behind with the old walls. She did not miss the lady on the landing. In fact, she rarely thought about her at all. Years passed without incident. School, friendships, adolescence. The story of the old house became something told occasionally, usually when family members compared memories and realized how many of them overlapped. Crying heard when no one was there, footsteps mistaken for intruders. That night, her mother locked herself in the bathroom, convinced someone was upstairs. Each story alone sounded explainable. Together, they formed a quiet consensus that the house had been difficult. Still, nothing followed her. That sense of distance held until university. By then, she was older, more analytical, far less inclined to jump to supernatural conclusions. She lived with roommates, kept irregular hours, and had what she described as a typical student body clock, mostly nocturnal, awake when the rest of the house slept. Being alone at odd hours no longer bothered her. If anything, she enjoyed the quiet. At first, the return of unease was subtle. She began waking around 3 a.m. again, not always to fear, but to restlessness, thirst, the vague sense that sleep had simply decided it was finished. She would go downstairs, get a drink, and head straight back up. She avoided the lounge out of habit more than fear, passing it only briefly through the hallway. That was when she noticed the television. On her way downstairs, the lounge was always dark. On her way back up, the screen sometimes glowed faintly black, as if powered on, but displaying nothing. She would stop and watch it for a moment, unsettled by the sight. After a minute or two, the screen would go dark again. What bothered her was not just that the television was on, and it was that it made no sound. The set had a distinct startup noise, one she recognized easily. When this happened, there was no sound at all. No click, no chime, just the silent glow of a powered screen. People offered explanations when she mentioned it. Automatic updates, power cycling, faulty wiring, all reasonable. Except it never happened at the same time each night, never happened when anyone else was awake, and sometimes occurred on both the lounge television and the smaller kitchen, one simultaneously, and it only ever happened when she was alone. Then the lights started behaving strangely. If she switched on a light in the kitchen, hallway, or landing, while home alone, the fuse would often blow instantly, plunging the area into darkness. It wasn't a gradual failure, so it was immediate and complete. She told herself, it was coincidence, old electrics, overloaded circuits, but the pattern was too specific to ignore. The feeling of being watched returned with it faint at first, then persistent enough to change how she moved through the house. It wasn't tied to a single room. It was more like a pressure that followed her attention, intensifying when she noticed it and receding when she distracted herself. Then came the episode on the doorstep. She was sitting outside smoking when the sensation hit without warning. It wasn't fear exactly. It was despair, sudden and overwhelming, crashing into her thoughts so completely that it stole her breath. For a brief moment, she felt as though everything was unbearable, that continuing in that state was impossible. Her body locked, her breathing failed, her vision narrowed, then she vomited. The images that flashed through her mind during that moment were vivid and disturbing, though she could not recall them afterward. They vanished as soon as the feeling passed, leaving her shaken and confused. She had never experienced anything like it before, and once it ended, it did not linger. There was no gradual recovery. One moment she was trapped inside it, the next it was gone. That was what frightened her most, not the intensity, but the abruptness. Still reeling, she went upstairs. Not long after, her younger brother entered her room carrying a set of cards she had never seen before. He was 11 and often practiced card tricks, but these were different. He asked her to choose a card, then asked her to choose top or bottom. She chose top. He read the words aloud. You're in danger, excess, and solitude. She laughed it off outwardly, but the timing struck too close to whatever had just happened to dismiss entirely. Her brother was not prone to theatrics like that. He had no context for what she had been feeling. And yet the phrase landed with uncomfortable precision. She began thinking back to the lady on the landing. Imaginary friends she knew were common. Children invented companions all the time, especially only children. But most imaginary friends faded without leaving residue. They did not seem to teach children about rules or authority. They did not leave behind specific physical fears tied to exact locations. And they did not reappear decades later through different expressions. If the lady on the landing had been imaginary, then why had the fear remained after she was forgotten? If the figure in the doorway had been a childhood hallucination, then why had her mother sensed something too? If the activity now was psychological, then why did it follow patterns that echoed earlier years so closely? she did not leap to conclusions. If anything, she leaned the other way, questioning herself, her memory, her tendency to connect dots that might not belong together. University life was stressful. Sleep schedules were erratic. Anxiety manifested in strange ways. And yet, the timing, the repetition, the return of the hour, the sense of presence that felt familiar rather than new. She found herself wondering whether whatever she had known as a child had never truly left. Only waited until she was alone enough to notice again. Or whether this was simply the echo of an imagination that had never fully shut its doors. Because if it was imaginary, then it meant her own mind was capable of producing terror so real it overrode logic, memory, and even her sense of self. And if it wasn't imaginary, then the most unsettling possibility remained. That the lady on the landing had never been meant to stay on the landing at all. What troubled her most was not the return of unease, but its familiarity. It did not feel like something new intruding on her life. It felt like something old adjusting its angle, finding another way to be noticed. The sensations were quieter now, less theatrical than the nights of her childhood, but they carried the same texture, the same insistence, the same sense that whatever this was had learned her rhythms. She tried to approach it logically. Imaginary friends were common in early childhood, especially for only children. Psychologists had written volumes about how young minds create companions to process authority, fear, and social structure. A stern teacher figure on a landing was not on its own extraordinary. Nor were childhood night terrors, sleep paralysis, or fear of transitional spaces like staircases and hallways. All of it could be explained. And yet the explanations didn't account for what lingered after. The explanations should have done their work. Imaginary friends did not usually leave behind architectural fear. They did not mark specific locations in a house with such precision that decades later the body still remembered them. And they did not return in altered forms at different stages of life, responding to solitude rather than imagination. If the lady on the landing had been nothing more than a projection, then it should have dissolved completely when she outgrew the need for it. Instead, what faded was the figure, not the feeling. She thought often about the timing of the original encounters, the illness in the family, the tension in the house, the way adults whispered and worried. Children absorbed those things even when no one explained them. Perhaps the landing had become a focal point for everything she could not understand or control. But that explanation unraveled when she remembered her mother's reaction that night in the bedroom. The immediate recognition, the question asked without prompting, the shared fear that settled between them before either had spoken. That moment refused to become memory in the safe, distant way childhood often does. As for the recent experiences, she tested every mundane possibility she could think of. Electrical faults were checked. The televisions were updated, unplugged, reset. The fuses behaved normally when anyone else was home. Nothing malfunctioned when she was not alone. The more she tried to pin the experiences down, the more they seemed to evade definition. She did not feel attacked. She did not feel threatened. She felt observed. The feeling on the doorstep haunted her most, not because it returned, but because it felt invasive in a way nothing else had. It had bypassed fear entirely and gone straight for despair, flooding her with emotion that did not feel like her own. She had struggled before. She knew the shape of her own sadness. This was different. It was sudden, total, and left no residue once it passed. That frightened her more than footsteps or figures ever had. If the mind could generate something like that without warning, then the boundary between imagination and experience was thinner than she wanted to admit. And if it hadn't come from her mind, then the implications were worse. She found herself thinking again about the lady on the landing, not as a ghost, not as a monster, but as a construct, a presence defined by authority and rules, friendly, but not indulgent, stern, but not cruel, something that watched, listened, and waited, something that seemed most active when she was alone, uncertain, or overwhelmed. The idea formed slowly and reluctantly. What if the figure had never been external at all? What if it had been the mind's way of creating order in moments where none existed? a watcher to assign meaning, a teacher to impose structure. And what if, in moments of vulnerability, that internal framework had resurfaced not as comfort but as scrutiny? That interpretation explained more than she liked. It explained the timing, the recurrence during stress, the fixation on transitional spaces and liminal hours, the way the experiences intensified when she was isolated and eased when she felt grounded. It even explained why the activity had not escalated into something catastrophic, why it had no agenda beyond being noticed. But that explanation still left gaps. It did not explain the synchronized reactions of others, the physical sensations shared, the moments that seemed to cross the boundary between internal experience and external confirmation. And it did not explain why the activity stopped. As abruptly as it had returned, it receded again. The television stayed dark, the lights behaved, the feeling of being watched softened until it disappeared entirely. Weeks passed, then months. Life moved forward, demanding attention in ways that left little room for introspection. She graduated. She moved again. She built routines that filled the empty hours where unease once thrived. Nothing followed her. The silence did not feel triumphant. It felt neutral, as if whatever had been present no longer had reason to remain. That raised one final unsettling possibility. Perhaps the experiences had not been about a presence at all, but about thresholds. Childhood to adolescence, adolescence to adulthood. Periods of solitude where the mind reached outward to make sense of itself. But if that was true, then the lady on the landing had never been an entity so much as a marker, a signal that something internal was shifting, seeking form. And if that was the case, then the activity did not end because it was banished, or it ended because it was no longer needed. She does not speak about these things with certainty. She does not claim answers. If anything, the years have made her more skeptical, not less. She understands how easily memory can rearrange itself, how fear can give shape to ambiguity. And yet, she remains cautious. Because imaginary or not, the experiences shaped her. They taught her to pay attention to liminal moments, to respect the quiet signals the body sends before the mind catches up. They taught her that solitude can be both refuge and risk. Whether the lady on the landing was a childhood invention, a psychological response, or something else entirely, she cannot say. The same is true of what followed her later and what eventually stopped. What she knows is this: the mind is capable of building worlds that feel real enough to leave footprints, and sometimes those worlds linger long after the door that led to them has closed. She no longer feels watched, but she has not forgotten what it felt like when she did. And if the silence ever breaks again, she will not rush to name it. She will listen first, aware now that the most unsettling questions are not about whether something is real or imagined. They are about why it appears when it does, and why it chooses eventually to let go.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now, so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.